Moon threw down the umbrella, and he cried out, "Now this one will die while I am beating a fool." And he sat down beside Ching and took his hand and held it. And it was as light and dry and small as a withered oak leaf, and it was not possible to believe that any blood ran through it, so dry and light and hot it was. But Ching's face, which was pale and yellow every day, was now dark and spotted with his scanty blood, and his half-opened eyes were filmed and blind, and his breath came in gusts. Wang Lung leaned down to him and said loudly in his ear, "Here am I, and I will buy you a coffin second to my father's only." But Ching's ear was filled with his blood, and if he heard Wang Lung, he made no sign, but he only lay there panting and dying, and so he died. When he was dead, Wang Lung leaned over him, and he wept as he had not wept when his own father died. And he ordered a coffin of the best kind, and he hired priests for the funeral, and he walked behind, wearing white mourning. He made his eldest son even wear white bands on his ankles, as though a relative had died, although his son complained and said, "He was only an upper servant, and it is not suitable so to mourn for a servant." But Wang Lung compelled him for 3 days, and if Wang Lung had had his way wholly, he would have buried Ching inside the earthen wall where his father and Olan were buried. But his sons would not have it, and they complained and said, "Shall our mother and grandfather lie with a servant? And must we also in our time?" Then Wang Lung, because he could not contend with them, and because at his age he would have peace in his house, buried Ching at the entrance to the wall. And he was comforted with what he had done, and he said, "Well, and it is meet, for he has ever stood guardian to me against evil." And he directed his sons that when he himself died he should lie nearest to Ching. Then, less than ever, did Wang Lung go to see his lands, because now Ching was gone it stabbed him to go alone. And he was weary of labor, and his bones ached when he walked over the rough fields alone. So he rented out all his land that he could, and men took it eagerly, for it was known to be good land. But Wang Lung would never talk of selling a foot of any piece, and he would only rent it for an agreed price for a year at a time. Thus he felt it all his own and still in his hand. Then he appointed one of the laborers and his wife and children to live in the country house and to care for the two opium dreamers. Then, seeing his youngest son's wistful eyes, he said, "Well, and you may come with me into the town, and I will take my fool with me too, and she can live in my court where I am. It is too lonely for you now that Ching is gone, and with him gone I am not sure that they will be kind to the poor fool, seeing there will be none to tell if she is beaten or ill-fed. And there is no one now to teach you concerning the land now that Ching is gone." So Wang Lung took his youngest son and his fool with him, and thereafter he came scarcely at all for a long time to the house on his land. 30. Now to Wang Lung it seemed there was nothing left to be desired in his condition. And now he could sit in his chair in the sun beside his fool, and he could smoke his water pipe and be at peace, since his land was tended and the money from it coming into his hand without care from him. And so it might have been, if it had not been for that eldest son of his, who was never content with what was going on well enough, but must be looking aside for more. So he came to his father, saying, "There is this and that which we need in this house, and we must not think we can be a great family just because we live in these inner courts. Now there is my younger brother's wedding, due in a bare 6 months, and we have not chairs enough to seat the guests, and we have not bowls enough, nor tables enough, nor anything enough in these rooms. It is a shame, moreover, to ask guests to come through the great gates and through all that common swarm with their stinks and their noise. And with my brother wed and his children and mine to come, we need those courts also." Then Wang Lung looked at his son standing there in his handsome raiment, and he shut his eyes and drew hard on his pipe, and he growled forth, "Well, and what now, and what again?" The young man saw his father was weary of him, but he said stubbornly, and he made his voice a little louder, "I say we should have the outer courts also, and we should have what befits a family with so much money as we have, and good land as we have." Then Wang Lung muttered into his pipe, "Well, and the land is mine, and you have never put your hand to it."
"Well, and my father," the young man cried out at this, "it was you who would have me a scholar. And when I try to be a fitting son to a man of land, you scorn me, and would make a hind of me and my wife."
And the young man turned himself away stormily, and made as though he would knock his brains out against the twisted pine tree that stood there in the court. Wang Lung was frightened at this, lest the young man do himself an injury, since he had been fiery always, and so he called out, "Do as you like, do as you like, only do not trouble me with it." Hearing this, the son went away quickly, lest his father change, and he went well pleased. As quickly as he was able, then, he bought tables and chairs from Suzhou, carved and wrought, and he bought curtains of red silk to hang in the doorways, and he bought vases large and small, and he bought scrolls to hang on the wall, and as many as he could of beautiful women, and he bought curious rocks to make rockeries in the courts such as he had seen in southern parts, and thus he busied himself for many days. With all this coming and going, he had to pass many times through the outer courts, even every day, and he could not pass among the common people without sticking his nose up, and he could not bear them, so that the people who lived there laughed at him after he had passed, and they said, "He has forgotten the smell of the manure in the dooryard on his father's farm." But still none dared to speak thus as he passed, for he was a rich man's son. When the feast came, when rents are decided upon, these common people found that the rent for the rooms and the courts where they lived had been greatly raised, because another would pay that much for them, and they had to move away. Then they knew it was Wang Lung's eldest son who had done this, although he was clever and said nothing, and did it all by letters to the son of the old Lord Huang in foreign parts. And this son of the old Lord cared for nothing except where and how he could get the most money for the old house. The common people had to move then, and they moved complaining and cursing because a rich man could do as he would, and they packed their tattered possessions and went away swelling with anger and muttering that one day they would come back even as the poor do come back when the rich are too rich. But all this Wang Lung did not hear, since he was in the inner courts and seldom came forth, since he slept and ate and took his ease as his age came on. And he left the thing in the hands of his eldest son. And his son called carpenters and clever masons, and they repaired the rooms and the moon gates between the courts that the common people had ruined with their coarse ways of living. And he built again the pools, and he bought flecked and golden fish to put in them. And after it was all finished and made beautiful, as far as he knew beauty, he planted lotus and lilies in the pools, and the scarlet-berried bamboo of India, and everything he could remember he had seen in southern parts. And his wife came out to see what he had done, and the two of them walked about through every court and room, and she saw this and that still lacking, and he listened with great heed to all she said that he might do it. Then people on the streets of the town heard of all that Wang Long's eldest son did, and they talked of what was being done in the great house, now that a rich man lived there again. And the people who had said Wang the farmer now said Huang the big man, or Huang the rich man. The money for all these doings had gone out of Wang Lung's hand bit by bit, so that he scarcely knew when it went. For the eldest son came and said, "I need 100 pieces of silver here." Or he said, "There is a good gate which needs only an odd bit of silver to mend it as good as new." Or he said, "There is a place where a long table should stand." And Wang Lung gave him the silver bit by bit as he sat smoking and resting in his court, for the silver came in easily from the land at every harvest, and whenever he needed it, and so he gave it easily. He would not have known how much he gave had not his second son come into his court one morning when the sun was scarcely over the wall, and he said, "My father, is there to be no end to all this pouring out of money? And need we live in a palace? So much money lent out at 20% would have brought in many pounds of silver. And what is the use of all these pools and flowering trees that bear no fruit even, and all these idle blooming lilies?" Wang Lung saw that these two brothers would quarrel over this yet, and he said hastily, lest he never have any peace, Well, and it is all in honor of your wedding.
Then the young man answered, smiling crookedly and without any meaning of mirth, It is an odd thing for the wedding to cost 10 times as much as the bride. Here is our inheritance that should be divided between us when you are dead, being spent now for nothing but the pride of my elder brother.
And Wang Lung knew the determination of this second son of his, and he knew he would never have done with him if talk began, so he said hastily, Well, I will have an end to it. I will speak to your brother, and I will shut my hand. It is enough. You are right.
The young man had brought out a paper on which was written the list of all the monies his brother had spent, and Wang Lung saw the length of the list, and he said quickly, I have not eaten yet, and at my age I am faint in the morning until I eat. Another time for this. And he turned and went into his own room, and so dismissed his second son.
But he spoke that same evening to his eldest son, saying, Have done with all this painting and polishing. It is enough. We are, after all, country folk.
But the young man answered proudly, That we are not. Men in the town are beginning to call us the great family Wang. It is fitting that we live somewhat suitably to that name. And if my brother cannot see beyond the meaning of silver for its own sake, I and my wife, we will uphold the honor of the name. Now, Wang Lung had not known that men so called his house, for as he grew older he went seldom even to the tea shops, and no more to the grain market, since there was his second son to do his business there for him. But it pleased him secretly, and so he said, Well, even great families are from the land and rooted in the land. But the young man answered smartly, Yes, but they do not stay there. They branch forth and bear flowers and fruits. Wang Lung would not have his son answering him too easily and quickly like this, so he said, I have said what I have said. Have done with pouring out silver. And roots, if they are to bear fruits, must be kept well in the soil of the land. Then, since evening came on, he wished his son to go away out of this court and into his own. He wished the young man to go away and leave him in peace in the twilight and alone. But there was no peace for him with this son of his. This son was willing to obey his father now, for he was satisfied in the rooms and the courts, at least for the time, and he had done what he would do. But he began again, Well, let it be enough, but there is another thing. Then Wang Lung flung his pipe down upon the ground, and he shouted, Am I never to be in peace? And the young man went on stubbornly, It is not for myself or for my son, it is for my youngest brother, who is your own son. It is not fit that he grow up so ignorant. He should be taught something. Wang Lung stared at this, for it was a new thing. He had long ago settled the life of his youngest son, what it was to be, and he said now, There is no need for any more stomachs full of characters in this house. Two is enough, and he is to be on the land when I am dead. Yes, and for this he weeps in the night, and this is why he is so pale and so reedy a lad, answered the eldest son.
Now, Wang Lung had never thought to ask his youngest son what he wished to do with his life, since he had decided one son must be on the land, and this that his eldest son had said struck him between the brows, and he was silent. He picked up his pipe from the ground slowly and pondered about his third son. He was a lad not like either of his brothers, a lad as silent as his mother, and because he was silent, none paid any attention to him. "Have you heard him say this?" asked Wang Lung of his eldest son, uncertainly.
"Ask him for yourself, my father," replied the young man.
"Well, but one lad must be on the land," said Wang Lung suddenly, in argument, and his voice was very loud.
"But why, my father?" urged the young man. You are a man who need not have any sons like serfs. It is not fitting. People will say you have a mean heart. There is a man who makes his son into a hind while he lives like a prince, so people will say.
Now the young man spoke cleverly, for he knew that his father cared mightily what people said of him. And he went on,
We could call a tutor and teach him, and we could send him to a southern school and he could learn. And since there is I in your house to help you and my second brother in his good trade, let the lad choose what he will.
Then Wang Lung said at last, Send him here to me. After a while the third son came and stood before his father, and Wang Lung looked at him to see what he was. And he saw a tall and slender lad who was neither his father nor his mother, except that he had his mother's gravity and silence. But there was more beauty in him than there had been in his mother. And for beauty alone he had more of it than any of Wang Lung's children, except the second girl who had gone to her husband's family, and belonged no more to the house of Wang. But across the lad's forehead, and almost a mar to his beauty, were his two black brows, too heavy and black for his young, pale face. And when he frowned, and he frowned easily, these black brows met, heavy and straight across his brow. And Wang Lung stared at his son, and after he had seen him well, he said, "Your eldest brother says you wish to learn to read." And the boy said, scarcely stirring his lips, "Aye." Wang Lung shook the ash from his pipe and pushed the fresh tobacco in slowly with his thumb.
"Well, and I suppose that means you do not want to work on the land, and I shall not have a son on my own land, and I with sons and to spare."
This he said with bitterness. But the boy said nothing. He stood there straight and still in his long white robe of summer linen. And at last Wang Lung was angry at his silence, and he shouted at him, "Why do you not speak? Is it true you do not want to be on the land?" And again the boy answered only the one word, "I." And Wang Lung, looking at him, said to himself at last that these sons of his were too much for him in his old age, and they were a care and burden to him, and he did not know what to do with them. And he shouted again, feeling himself ill-used by these sons of his, "What is it to me what you do? Get away from me!" Then the boy went away swiftly, and Wang Lung sat alone, and he said to himself that his two girls were better, after all, than his sons. One, poor fool that she was, never wanted anything more than a bit of any food and her length of cloth to play with, and the other one married and away from his house. And the twilight came down over the court and shut him into it alone. Nevertheless, as Wang Lung always did when his anger passed, he let his sons have their way. And he called his elder son, and he said, "Engage a tutor for the third one, if he wills it, and let him do as he likes. Only I am not to be troubled about it." And he called his second son and said, "Since I am not to have a son on the land, it is your duty to see to the rents and to the silver that comes in from the land at each harvest. You can weigh and measure, and you shall be my steward." The second son was pleased enough, for this meant the money would pass through his hands, at least, and he would know what came in, and he could complain to his father if more than enough was spent in the house. Now, this second son of his seemed more strange to Wang than any of his sons, for even at the wedding day which came on, he was careful of the money spent on meats and on wines, and he divided the tables carefully, keeping the best meats for his friends in the town who knew the cost of the dishes, and for the tenants and the country people who must be invited, he spread tables in the courts, and to these he gave only the second best in meat and wine, since they daily ate coarse fare, and a little better was very good to them. And the second son watched the money and the gifts that came in, and he gave to the slaves and servants the least that could be given them, so that Cuckoo sneered when into her hand he put a paltry 2 pieces of silver, and she said in the hearing of many, "Now a truly great family is not so careful of its silver, and one can see that this family does not rightly belong in these courts." The eldest son heard this, and he was ashamed, and he was afraid of her tongue, and he gave her more silver secretly, and he was angry with his second brother. Thus there was the trouble between them, even on the very wedding day when the guests sat about the tables and when the bride's chair was entering the courts. And of his own friends, the eldest son asked but a few of the least considered to the feast, because he was ashamed of his brother's parsimony, and because the bride was but a village maid. He stood aside scornfully, and he said, "Well, and my brother has chosen an earthen pot, when he might, from my father's position, have had a cup of jade." And he was scornful, and nodded stiffly when the pair came and bowed before him and his wife as their elder brother and sister. And the wife of the eldest son was correct and haughty and bowed only the least that could be considered proper for her position. Now, of all of them who lived in these courts, it seemed there was none wholly at peace and comfortable there, except the small grandson who had been born to Wang Lung. Even Wang Lung himself, walking within the shadows of the great carved bed where he slept in his own room that was next to the court where Lotus lived, even he woke to dream sometimes that he was back in the simple, dark, earth-walled house, where a man could throw his cold tea down where he would not spatter a piece of carven wood, and where a step took him to his own fields. As for Wang Lung's sons, there was a continual unrest. The eldest son, lest not enough be spent and they be belittled in the eyes of men, and lest the villagers come walking through the great gate, when a man from the town was there to call, and so make them ashamed before him. And the second son, lest there was waste and money gone. And the youngest son striving to make repair the years he had lost as a farmer's son. But there was one who ran staggering hither and yon and content with his life, and it was the son of the eldest son. This small one never thought of any other place than this great house, and to him it was neither great nor small, but only his house. And here was his mother, and here his father and grandfather, and all those who lived but to serve him. And from this one did Wang Lung secure peace, and he could never have enough of watching him and laughing at him and picking him up when he fell. He remembered also what his own father had done, and he delighted to take a girdle and put it about the child and walk, holding him thus from falling. And they went from court to court, and the child pointed at the darting fish in the pools and jabbered this and that, and snatched the head of a flower, and was at ease in the midst of everything. And only thus did Wang Lung find peace. Nor was there only this one. The wife of the eldest son was faithful, and she conceived and bore and conceived and bore regularly and faithfully, and each child as it was born had its slave. Thus Wang Lung each year saw more children in the courts and more slaves, so that when one said to him, "There is to be another mouth again in the eldest son's court," he only laughed and said, "Well, there is rice and enough for all, since we have the good land." And he was pleased when his second son's wife bore also in her season. And she gave birth to a girl first, as was fitting, and it was seemly out of respect to her sister-in-law. Wang Lung then, in the space of 5 years, had 4 grandsons and 3 granddaughters, and the courts were filled with their laughter and their weeping. Now, 5 years is nothing in a man's life except when he is very young and very old, and if it gave to Wang Lung these others, it took away also that old dreamer, his uncle, whom he had almost forgotten, except to see that he and his old wife were fed and clothed and had what they wished of opium. On the winter of the 5th year, it was very cold, more cold than any 30 years before, so that for the first time in Wang Lung's memory the moat froze about the wall of the town, and men could walk back and forth on it. A continual icy wind blew also from the northeast, and there was nothing, no garment of goatskin or fur that could keep a man warm. In every room of the great house they burned braziers of charcoal, and still it was cold enough to see a man's breath when he blew it out. Now, Wang Lung's uncle and his wife had long since smoked all the flesh off their bones, and they lay day in and day out on their beds like 2 old dry sticks, and there was no warmth in them. And Wang Lung heard his uncle could not sit up even any more in his bed, and he spat blood whenever he moved at all, and he went out to see, and he saw there were not many hours left for the old man. Then Wang Lung bought 2 coffins of wood good enough, but not too good, and he had the coffins taken into the room where his uncle lay, that the old man might see them, and die in comfort, knowing there was a place for his bones. And his uncle said, his voice a quavering whisper,
"Well, and you are a son to me, and more than that wandering one of my own."
And the old woman said, but she was still stouter than the man,
"If I die before that son comes home, promise me you will find a good maid for him, so that he may have sons for us yet."
and Wang Long promised it. What hour his uncle died, Wang Long did not know, except that he lay dead one evening when the serving woman went in to take a bowl of soup, and Wang Long buried him on a bitter cold day when the wind blew the snow over the land in clouds, and he put the coffin in the family enclosure beside his father, only a little lower than his father's grave, but above the place where his own was to be. Then Wang Long caused mourning to be made for the whole family, and they wore the sign of mourning for a year, not because any truly mourned the passing of this old man who had never been anything but a care to them, but because it is fitting to do so in a great family when a relative dies. Then Wang Long moved his uncle's wife into the town where she would not be alone, and he gave her a room at the end of a far court for her own, and he told Cuckoo to supervise a slave in the care of her, and the old woman sucked her opium pipe and lay on her bed in great content, sleeping day after day, and her coffin was beside her where she could see it for her comfort. And Wang Long marveled to think that once he had feared her for a great fat blousy countrywoman, idle and loud, she who lay there now shriveled and yellow and silent, and as shriveled and yellow as the old mistress had been in the fallen house of Huang.
31. Now all his life long, Wang Long had heard of war here and there, but he had never seen the thing come near. Except the once that he wintered in the southern city when he was young, it had never come nearer to him than that, although he had often heard men say from the time he was a child, "There is a war to the west this year," or they said, "War is to the east," or "the northeast." And to him, war was a thing like earth and sky and water. And why it was, no one knew, but only that it was. Now and again he heard men say, "We will go to the wars." This they said when they were about to starve and would rather be soldiers than beggars. And sometimes men said it when they were restless at home, as the son of his uncle had said it. But however this was, the war was always away and in a distant place. Then suddenly, like a reasonless wind out of heaven, the thing came near. Wang Long heard of it first from his second son, who came home from the market one day for his noon rice, and he said to his father, "The price of grain has risen suddenly, for the war is to the south of us now, and nearer every day, and we must hold our stores of grain until later, for the price will go higher and higher, as the armies come nearer to us, and we can sell for a good price." Wang Long listened to this as he ate, and he said, "Well, and it is a curious thing, and I shall be glad to see a war for what it is, for I have seen it." To himself, then, he remembered that once he had been afraid because he would have been seized against his will. But now he was too old for use, and besides he was rich, and the rich need not fear anything. So he paid no great heed to the matter beyond this, and he was not moved by more than a little curiosity, and he said to his second son, "Do as you think well with the grain. It is in your hands." And in the days to come he played with his grandchildren when he was in the mood, and he slept and ate and smoked, and sometimes he went to see his poor fool who sat in a far corner of his court. Then, sweeping out of the northwest like a swarm of locusts, there came one day in early summer a horde of men. Wang Lung's small grandson stood at the gate with a manservant to see what passed one fine sunny morning in early spring, and when he saw the long ranks of grey-coated men, he ran back to his grandfather, and he cried out, "See what comes, old one!" Then Wang Lung went back to the gate with him to humour him, and there were the men filling the street, filling the town, and Wang Lung felt as though air and sunlight had been suddenly cut off because of the numbers of grey men tramping heavily and in unison through the town. Then Wang Lung looked at them closely, and he saw that every man held an implement of some sort with a knife sticking out of the end, and the face of every man was wild and fierce and coarse, even though some were only lads, they were so. And Wang Long drew the child to him hastily when he saw their faces, and he murmured, "Let us go and lock the gate. They are not good men to see, my little heart." But suddenly, before he could turn, one saw him from among the men and shouted out at him, "Ho there, my old father's nephew!" Huanglong looked up at this call, and he saw the son of his uncle, and he was clad like the others and dusty and gray, but his face was wilder and more fierce than any, and he laughed harshly and called out to his fellows, "Here we may stop, my comrades, for this is a rich man and my relative." Before Huanglong could move in his horror, the horde was pouring past him into his own gates, and he was powerless in their midst. Into his courts they poured like evil, filthy water, filling every corner and crack. And they laid themselves down on the floors, and they dipped with their hands into the pools and drank. And they clattered their knives down upon carven tables, and they spat where they would, and shouted at each other. Then Huanglong, in despair over what had happened, ran back with the child to find his eldest son. He went into his son's courts, and there his son sat reading a book, and he rose when his father entered. And when he heard what Huanglong gasped forth, he began to groan, and he went out. But when he saw his cousin, he did not know whether to curse him or to be courteous to him. But he looked, and he groaned forth to his father, who was behind him, "Every man with a knife!" So he was courteous then, and he said, "Well, and my cousin, welcome to your home again." And the cousin grinned widely and said, "I have brought a few guests." "They are welcome, being yours," said Huanglong's eldest son. "And we will prepare a meal so that they may eat before they go on their way." Then the cousin said, still grinning, "Do, but make no haste afterwards, for we will rest a handful of days, or a moon, or a year or two, for we are to be quartered on the town until the war calls." Now when Huanglong and his son heard this, they could scarcely conceal their dismay, but still it must be concealed, because of the knives flashing everywhere through the courts. So they smiled what poor smiles they could muster, and they said, "We are fortunate, we are fortunate." And the eldest son pretended he must go to prepare, and he took his father's hand, and the two of them rushed into the inner court, and the eldest son barred the door, and then the two, father and son, stared at each other in consternation, and neither knew what to do. Then the second son came running, and he beat upon the door, and when they let him in, he fell in and scarcely could save himself in his haste, and he panted forth, "There are soldiers everywhere, in every house, even in the houses of the poor. And I came running to say, 'You must not protest, for today a clerk in my shop, and I knew him well, he stood beside me every day at the counter, and he heard and went to his house, and there were soldiers in the very room where his wife lay ill, and he protested, and they ran a knife through him, as though he were made of lard, as smoothly as that, and it came through him clean to the other side. Whatever they wish, we must give, but let us only pray that the war move on to other parts before long.' Then the three of them looked at each other heavily, and thought of their women, and of these lusty, hungry men. And the eldest son thought of his goodly, proper wife, and he said, 'We must put the women together in the innermost court, and we must watch there day and night, and keep the gates barred, and the back gates of peace ready to be loosed and opened.' Thus they did. They took the women and the children, and they put them all into the inner court where Lotus had lived, alone with Cuckoo and her maids. And there, in discomfort and crowding, they lived. The eldest son and Huanglong watched the gate day and night, and the second son came when he could, and they watched as carefully by night as by day. But there was that one, the cousin, and because he was a relative, none could lawfully keep him out. And he beat on the gate, and he would come in, and he walked about at will, carrying his knife, shining and glittering and open, in his hand. The eldest son followed him about, his face full of bitterness, but still not daring to say anything, for there was the knife open and glittering. And the cousin looked at this and that, and appraised each woman. He looked at the wife of the eldest son, and he laughed his hoarse laugh, and he said, 'Well, and it is a proper dainty bit you have, my cousin, a town lady, and her feet as small as lotus buds.' And to the wife of the second son he said, 'Well, here is a good stout red radish from the country, a piece of sturdy red meat.' This he said because the woman was fat and ruddy and thick in the bone, but still not uncomely. And whereas the wife of the eldest son shrank away when he looked at her and hid her face behind her sleeve, this one laughed out, good-humoured and robust as she was, and she answered pertly, Well, and some men like a taste of hot radish or a bite of red meat.
And the cousin answered back promptly, "That do I,"
and he made as if to seize her hand. All this time the eldest son was in agony of shame at this byplay between man and woman, who ought not even to speak to each other, and he glanced at his wife, because he was ashamed of his cousin and of his sister-in-law, before her who had been more gently bred than he. And his cousin saw his timidity before his wife, and said with malice,
"Well, and I'd rather eat red meat any day than a slice of cold and tasteless fish like this other one."
At this, the wife of the eldest son rose in dignity and withdrew herself into an inner room.
Then the cousin laughed coarsely, and he said to Lotus, who sat there smoking her water pipe, "These town women are too finicking, are they not, old mistress?"
Then he looked at Lotus attentively, and he said,
"Well, and old mistress indeed. And if I did not know my cousin Wang Lung were rich, I should know by looking at you such a mountain of flesh you have become. And well you have eaten, and how richly. It is only rich men's wives who can look like you."
Now Lotus was mightily pleased that he called her old mistress, because it is a title that only the ladies of great families may have. And she laughed deep and gurgling out of her fat throat, and she blew the ash out of her pipe and handed the pipe to a slave to fill again. And she said, turning to Cuckoo,
"Well, this coarse fellow has a turn for a joke."
And as she said this, she looked at the cousin out of her eyes coquettishly, although such glances, now that her eyes were no longer large and apricot-shaped in her great cheeks, were less coy than they once were. And seeing the look she gave him, the cousin laughed in uproar and cried out,
"Well, and it is an old bitch still!"
And he laughed again loudly. And all this time the eldest son stood there in anger and in silence. Then, when the cousin had seen everything, he went to see his mother, and Wang Lung went with him to show where she was. There she lay on her bed asleep, so her son could hardly wake her. But wake her he did, clapping the thick end of his gun upon the tiles of the floor at her bed's head. Then she woke and stared at him out of a dream, and he said impatiently,
"Well, and here is your son, and yet you sleep on."
She raised herself then in her bed and stared at him again, and she said, wondering,
"My son, it is my son."
And she looked at him for a long time, and at last, as though she did not know what else to do, she proffered him her opium pipe, as if she could think of no greater good than this, and she said to the slave that tended her,
"Prepare some for him."
And he stared back at her, and he said,
"No, I will not have it."
Wang Lung stood there beside the bed, and he was suddenly afraid lest this man should turn on him and say, "What have you done to my mother that she is sear and yellow like this, and all her good flesh gone?" So Wang said hastily himself, "I wish she were content with less, for it runs into a handful of silver a day for her opium. But at her age we do not dare to cross her, and she wants it all." And he sighed as he spoke, and he glanced secretly at his uncle's son. But the man said nothing, only stared to see what his mother had become. And when she fell back and into her sleep again, he rose and clattered forth, using his gun as a stick in his hand. None of the horde of idle men in the outer courts did Wang Lung and his family hate and fear as they did this cousin of theirs. This, although the men tore at the trees and the flowering shrubs of plum and almond and broke them as they would, and though they crushed the delicate carvings of chairs with their great leathern boots, and though they sullied with their private filth the pools where the flecked and golden fish swam so that the fish died and floated on the water and rotted there with their white bellies upturned. For the cousin ran in and out as he would, and he cast eyes at the slaves. And Wang Lung and his sons looked at each other out of their eyes haggard and sunken, because they dared not sleep. Then Cuckoo saw it, and she said,
"Now there is only one thing to do. He must be given a slave for his pleasure while he is here, or else he will be taking where he should not."
And Wang Lung seized eagerly on what she said, because it seemed to him he could not endure his life any more with all the trouble there was in his house. And so he said, "It is a good thought." And he bade Cuckoo go and ask the cousin what slave he would have, since he had seen them all. And so Cuckoo did then, and she came back and she said,
"He says he will have the little pale one who sleeps on the bed of the mistress."
Now this pale slave was called Pear Blossom, and the one Wang Lung had bought in a famine year when she was small and piteous and half-starved, and because she was delicate always, they had petted her and allowed her only to help Cuckoo and to do the lesser things about Lotus, filling her pipe and pouring her tea, and it was thus the cousin had seen her. Now when Pear Blossom heard this, she cried out as she poured the tea for Lotus, for Cuckoo set it all out before them in the inner court where they sat, and she dropped the pot, and it broke into pieces on the tiles, and the tea all streamed out. But the maid did not see what she had done. She only threw herself down before Lotus, and she knocked her head on the tiles, and she moaned forth, "Oh, my mistress, not I, not I! I am afraid of him for my life!" And Lotus was displeased with her, and she answered pettishly, "Now he is only a man, and a man is no more than a man with a maid, and they are all alike, and what is this ado?" And she turned to Cuckoo and said, "Take this slave and give her to him." Then the young maid put her hands together piteously and cried as though she would die of weeping and fear, and her little body was all trembling with her fear, and she looked from this face to that beseeching with her weeping. Now the sons of Wang Lung could not speak against their father's wife, nor could their wives speak if they did not, nor could the youngest son, but he stood there staring at her, his hands clenched on his bosom and his brows drawn down over his eyes, straight and black. But he did not speak. The children and the slaves looked and were silent, and there was only the sound of this dreadful frightened weeping of the young girl. But Wang Lung was made uncomfortable by it. And he looked at the young girl doubtfully, not caring to anger Lotus, but still moved, because he had always a soft heart. Then the maid saw his heart in his face, and she ran and held his feet with her hands. And she bent her head down to his feet and wept on in great sobs. And he looked down at her and saw how small her shoulders were, and how they shook. And he remembered the great coarse wild body of his cousin, now long past his youth. And a distaste for the thing seized him. And he said to Cuckoo, his voice mild, "Well now, it is ill to force the young maid like this." These words he said mildly enough, but Lotus cried out sharply,
"She is to do as she is told, and I say it is foolish, all this weeping over a small thing that must happen soon or late with all women."
But Wang Lung was indulgent, and he said to Lotus, "Let us see first what else can be done, and let me buy for you another slave, if you will, or what you will, but let me see what can be done." Then Lotus, who had long been minded of a foreign clock and a new ruby ring, was suddenly silent, and Wang Lung said to Cuckoo, "Go and tell my cousin the girl has a vile and incurable disease. But if he will have her with that, then well enough, and she shall come to him. But if he fears it, as we all do, then tell him we have another and a sound one." Then he cast his eyes over the slaves who stood about, and they turned away their faces and giggled and made as if they were ashamed, all except one stout wench, who was already 20 or so. And she said, with her face red and laughing, "Well, and I have heard enough of this thing, and I have a mind to try it, if he will have me, and he is not so hideous a man as some." Then Wang Lung answered in relief, "Well, go then." And Cuckoo said, "Follow close behind me, for it will happen, I know, that he will seize the fruit nearest to him." And they went out. But the little maid still clung to Wang Lung's feet. Only now she ceased her weeping and lay listening to what took place. And Lotus was still angry with her, and she rose and went into her room without a word. Then Wang Lung raised the maid gently, and she stood before him drooping and pale, and he saw that she had a little soft oval face, egg-shaped, exceedingly delicate and pale, and a little pale red mouth, and he said kindly, "Now, keep away from your mistress for a day or two, my child, until she is past her anger. And when that other one comes in, hide, lest he desire you again. And she lifted her eyes and looked at him full and passionately, and she passed him, silent as a shadow, and was gone. The cousin lived there for a moon and a half, and he had the wench when he would, and she conceived by him and boasted in the courts of it. Then suddenly the war called, and the hoard went away quickly as chaff caught and driven by the wind, and there was nothing left except the filth and destruction they had wrought. And Wang Lung's cousin girded his knife to his waist, and he stood before them with his gun over his shoulder, and he said mockingly,
"Well, and if I come not back to you, I have left you my second self and a grandson for my mother. And it is not every man who can leave a son where he stops for a moon or two. And it is one of the benefits of a soldier's life. His seed springs up behind him, and others must tend it." And laughing at them all, he went on his way with the others.
32. When the soldiers were gone, Wang Lung and his two elder sons for once agreed, and it was that all trace of what had just passed must be wiped away. And they called in carpenters and masons again. And the men-servants cleaned the courts, and the carpenters mended cunningly the broken carvings and tables, and the pools were emptied of their filth and clean fresh water put in. And again the elder son bought flecked and golden fish, and he planted once more the flowering trees, and he trimmed the broken branches of the trees that were left. And within a year the place was fresh and flowering again. And each son had moved again into his own court, and there was order once more everywhere. The slave who had conceived by the son of Wang Lung's uncle, he commanded to wait upon his uncle's wife as long as she lived, which could not be long now, and to put her into the coffin when she died. And it was a matter for joy to Wang Lung that this slave gave birth only to a girl, for if it had been a boy she would have been proud and have claimed a place in the family, but being a girl it was only slave bearing slave, and she was no more than before. Nevertheless, Wang Lung was just to her as to all, and he said to her that she might have the old woman's room for her own if she liked when the old one was dead, and she could have the bed also. And one room and one bed would not be missed from the 60 rooms in the house. And he gave the slave a little silver, and the woman was content enough, except for one thing, and this she told to Wang Lung when he gave her the silver. "Hold the silver as dowry for me, my master," she said, "and if it is not a trouble to you, wed me to a farmer or to a good poor man. It will be a merit to you, and having lived with a man, it is hardship to me to go back to my bed alone." Then Wang Lung promised easily, and when he promised, he was struck with a thought, and it was this. Here was he promising a woman to a poor man. And once he had been a poor man, come into these very courts for his woman. And he had not, for half a lifetime, thought of Olan. And now he thought of her with sadness. There was not sorrow, but only heaviness of memory and things long gone. So far distant was he from her now. And he said heavily, "When the old opium dreamer dies, I will find a man for you then, and it cannot be long." And Wang Lung did as he said. The woman came to him one morning and said, "Now redeem your promise, my master, for the old one died in the early morning without waking at all, and I have put her in her coffin." And Wang Lung thought what man he knew now on his land, and he remembered the blubbering lad who had caused Ching's death, and the one whose teeth were a shelf over his lower lip, and he said, "Well, and he did not mean the thing he did, and he is as good as any, and the only one I can think of now." So he sent for the lad, and he came. And he was a man grown now, but still he was rude, and still his teeth were as they were. And it was Wang Lung's whim to sit on the raised dais in the great hall, and to call the two before him. And he said slowly, that he might taste the whole flavor of the strange moment, "Here, fellow, is this woman, and she is yours, if you will have her, and none has known her except the son of my own uncle." And the man took her gratefully, for she was a stout wench and good-natured, and he was a man too poor to wed except to such an one. And Wang Lung came down off the dais, and it seemed to him that now his life was rounded off, and he had done all that he said he would do in his life, and more than he could ever have dreamed he could. And he did not know himself how it had all come about. Only now it seemed to him that peace could truly come to him, and he could sleep in the sun. It was time for it also, for he was close to 65 years of his age, and his grandsons were like young bamboos about him, 3, the sons of his eldest son, and the eldest of these nearly 10 years old, and 2, the sons of his second son. Well, and there was the third son to wed one day soon, and with that over, there was nothing left to trouble him in his life, and he could be at peace. But there was no peace. It seemed as though the coming of the soldiers had been like the coming of a swarm of wild bees that leave behind them stings wherever they can. The wife of the eldest son and the wife of the second son, who had been courteous enough to each other until they lived in one court together, now had learned to hate each other with a great hatred. It was born in the 100 small quarrels, the quarrels of women whose children must live and play together and fight each other like cats and dogs. Each mother flew to the defense of her child and cuffed the other's children heartily, but spared her own, and her own had always the right in any quarrel, and so the two women were hostile. And then, on that day when the cousin had commended the country wife and laughed at the city wife, that had passed which could not be forgiven. The wife of the elder son lifted her head haughtily when she passed her sister-in-law, and she said aloud one day to her husband as she passed, "It is a heavy thing to have a woman bold and ill-bred in the family, so that a man may call her red meat and she laughs in his face." And the second son's wife did not wait, but she answered back loudly, "Now my sister-in-law is jealous because a man called her only a piece of cold fish." And so the two fell to angry looks and hatred, although the elder, being proud of her correctness, would deal only in silent scorn, careful to ignore the other's very presence. But when her children would go out of their own court, she called out, "I would have you stay away from ill-bred children." This she called out in the presence of her sister-in-law, who stood within sight in the next court. And that one would call out to her own children, "Do not play with snakes, or you will be bitten." So the two women hated each other increasingly. And the thing was the more bitter because the two brothers did not love each other well, the elder always being fearful lest his birth and his family seem lowly in the eyes of his wife, who was town-bred and better born than he, and the younger fearful lest his brother's desire for expenditure and place lead them into wasting their heritage before it was divided. Moreover, it was a shame to the elder brother that the second brother knew all the money their father had and what was spent, and the money passed through his hands, so that although Wang Lung received and dispensed all the monies from his lands, still the second brother knew what it was, and the elder did not, but must go and ask his father for this and that like a child. So when the two wives hated each other, their hatred spread to the men also. And the courts of the two were full of anger, and Wang Lung groaned because there was no peace in his house. Wang Lung had also his own secret trouble with Lotus since the day when he had protected her slave from the son of his uncle. Ever since that day, the young maid had been in disfavor with Lotus, and although the girl waited on her silently and slavishly, and stood by her side all day filling her pipe and fetching this and that, and rising in the night at her complaint that she was sleepless, and rubbing her legs and her body to soothe her, still Lotus was not satisfied. And she was jealous of the maid, and she sent her from the room when Wang Lung came in, and she accused Wang Lung that he looked at the maid. Now, Wang Lung had not thought of the girl except as a poor small child who was frightened, and he cared as he might care for his poor fool, and no more. But when Lotus accused him, he took thought to look, and he saw it was true that the girl was very pretty and pale as a pear blossom. And seeing this, something stirred in his old blood that had been quiet these 10 years and more. So while he laughed at Lotus, saying,
What? Are you thinking I am still a lust when I do not come into your room thrice a year?
Yet he looked sidelong at the girl, and he was stirred. Now Lotus, for all she was ignorant in all ways except the one, in the way of men with women she was learned, and she knew that men, when they are old, will wake once again to a brief youth, and so she was angry with the maid, and she talked of selling her to the tea-house. But still Lotus loved her comfort, and Cuckoo grew old and lazy, and the maid was quick and used about the person of Lotus, and saw what her mistress needed before she knew it herself. And so Lotus was loath to part with her, and yet she would part with her. And in this unaccustomed conflict, Lotus was the more angry because of her discomfort, and she was more hard than usual to live with. Wang Lung stayed away from her court for many days at a time because her temper was too ill to enjoy. He said to himself that he would wait, thinking it would pass. But meanwhile he thought of the pretty, pale young maid more than he himself would believe he did. Then, as though there were not enough trouble with the women of his house all awry, there was Wang Lung's youngest son. Now his youngest son had been so quiet a lad, so bent on his belated books, that none thought of him except as a reedy, slender youth with books always under his arm, and an old tutor following him about like a dog. But the lad had lived among the soldiers when they were there, and he had listened to their tales of war and plunder and battle, and he listened rapt to it all, saying nothing. Then he begged novels of his old tutor, stories of the wars of the Three Kingdoms, and of the bandits who lived in ancient times about the Sui Lake, and his head was full of dreams. So now he went to his father, and he said, "I know what I will do. I will be a soldier, and I will go forth to wars." When Wang Lung heard this, he thought in great dismay that it was the worst thing that could yet happen to him, and he cried out with a great voice, "Now what madness is this, and am I never to have any peace with my sons?" And he argued with the lad, and he tried to be gentle and kindly when he saw the lad's black brows gather into a line, and he said, "My son, it is said from ancient times that men do not take good iron to make a nail, nor a good man to make a soldier. And you are my little son, my best little youngest son. And how shall I sleep at night, and you wandering over the earth here and there in a war?" But the boy was determined, and he looked at his father and drew down his black brows, and he said only, "I will go." Then Wang Lung coaxed him and said, "Now you may go to any school you like, and I will send you to the great schools of the south, or even to a foreign school, to learn curious things. And you shall go anywhere you like for study, if you will not be a soldier. It is a disgrace to a man like me, a man of silver and of land, to have a son who is a soldier." And when the lad was still silent, he coaxed again, and he said, "Tell your old father why you want to be a soldier." And the lad said suddenly, and his eyes were alight under his brows, "There is to be a war such as we have not heard of. There is to be a revolution and fighting and war such as never was, and our land is to be free." Wang Lung listened to this in the greatest astonishment he had yet had from his three sons. "Now what all this stuff is, I do not know," he said, wondering. "Our land is free already. All our good land is free. I rent it to whom I will, and it brings me silver and good grains, and you eat and are clothed and are fed with it, and I do not know what freedom you desire more than you have." But the boy only muttered bitterly, "You do not understand. You are too old. You understand nothing." And Wang Lung pondered, and he looked at this son of his, and he saw the suffering young face, and he thought to himself, "Now I have given this son everything, even his life. He has everything from me. I have let him leave the land, even, so that I have not a son after me to see to the land. And I have let him read and write, although there is no need for it in my family with two already." And he thought, and he said to himself further, still staring at the lad, "Everything this son has from me." Then he looked closely at his son, and he saw that he was tall as a man already, though still reedy with youth. And he said doubtfully, muttering and half aloud, for he saw no sign of lust in the boy, "Well, It may be he needs one thing more. And he said aloud then, and slowly,
Well, and we will wed you soon, my son.
But the boy flashed a look of fire at his father from under his heavy gathered brows, and he said scornfully,
Then I will run away indeed, for to me a woman is